The point is, keep this thing going as long as you can, until the moment when it drops out, but then we go back into the mass now, and now it drops out. We are completely overtaken. The text, O moon, through my embrace and sweet love, you'll become as beautiful, strong, and powerful as I am. O moon, O sun, says she, you are recognized as the highest of all lights, and yet you require me as the rooster's hen. That is to say, the nature is what we're clarifying, and we can't disown it. Here, the sun is trapped and overflown with the mercury of the philosophers, the philosophical mercury, the transmuting force, disintegration, corruption, fermentation. Out of that comes the androgyne motif. Here lie king and queen dead. The soul departs with great anguish. See the soul departing here. Here the body divides into the four elements, and the soul departs from the body with a cry. Here's a little representation of this. You have the whole sequence here. Up there is the ego, the self of ego, being struck by the arrow of mercury, which we've seen already when that tree grew out of the pelvis of that figure six lion. And then we have the green lion here and the ram representing the sun power, and the conscious sun and the unconscious sun. But here are the four elements coming down into four separate receptacles, and the alchemist and his soror standing there. What we are seeing in all these symbols is a symbolization of what's happening in their mutual soul relationship. It's a picture of the relationship on the spiritual or psychological level. Meanwhile, they're right there on the ground. And it's a question of how in your secular conduct you want to have this thing realized in life. You don't have to go through in the total physical experience, but you do have to respect a relationship of some kind and realize the mystery of what's going on behind. Here we have the next thing. Here falls the dew from heaven and washes the black body in the grave. That is to say, just when you think all is lost, just at the abyss of the corruption, you have gone all the way down. The unconscious has become dominant. There comes a resolution that begins to take place, the absorption. This is something that's turning up in the way in which the schizophrenia is now being handled in certain places, where the individual, instead of being pushed aside or cured, that is to say, instead of aborting the psychosis, the individual is allowed, under supporting circumstances, to go right through the whole journey. And finally, they take place a spontaneous remission. That's what we're having here, the dew falls. Here is the representation of this situation with, from another context, spirit, soul, and body. But I'm showing it because we have the dragons here biting the heel, just as in that Greek figure from the 5th century BC. This is from the 17th century AD. This is 2,200 years later. That gives you a sense of the continuity of things. And here now comes a very interesting thing. The bird from the earth. The serpent is bound to the earth and so represents this bondage of the energy and consciousness of life to the field of time. The bird flies free, and for all mankind has been symbolic of the free flight of the spirit, and that we're disengaged from life. Now, in our usual way of thinking about spirit and matter, we think of them as two things, spirit out there, matter down here. But in this view, the spirit is the bouquet of the material life. it comes forth from the earth, from our body. So the bird comes up. Here we read the soul comes flying back and enlivens the purified body. See the little soul figure coming down again up here in the upper right. It's as though heaven and earth had brought forth through a virgin birth the golden self. That's what the virgin birth means. The virgin birth is a mythological motif that appears all over the world. Consequently, it cannot refer primarily to any specific historical event. The reference is to the birth of the spiritual being in the heart. Our mothers give birth to a little human animal, but at a moment in life, there is the awakening of the spiritual life, and that is the virgin birth. That also is the gold born from the primal matter that the alchemist is talking about. And then we have the triumph of the female androgynous, the female form, with three serpents in the cup here and one in the left hand. We'll talk about these three and one in a couple of minutes. Here is born the noble empress, whom the masters call their daughter. She multiplies herself and bears children without number, who are completely pure and free of all evil. Here's another representation of this figure. You have down here the primary unconscious, the primal matter in the form of the dragon, and then from that there has been sublimated this realization of the androgyne, which you might say is the ideal that we are to realize and can realize in marriage. And this amounts to the finding of the pure waters. The waters now bubbling forth are completely pure. The three spigots there are entitled first the milk of the virgin, the vinegar of the source, and the water of life. And the rim of the fountain says the mercurial energy of the mineral, vegetal, and animal worlds is one. Underneath, we are the beginning and first nature of all the metals, and the art makes us into its highest tincture. There is no fountain of water in the world like me. I make healthy, I make rich, and yet I am poisonous and terrifying and deadly. Here is an Indian representation in a tantric symbol of the same. Shiva and his goddess Parvati as one. This is known as Shiva Tanarishvara, Shiva the half-woman lord. In his right hand is the trident, and which you remember from Crete, the pair of opposites and the center. Her animal, seated on it, has been slain, and his animal, the bull, and from their joint bodies, there pours forth the river Ganges, or the grace of the world, which is represented here as a seminal effusion, the energy of which, in the Indian view, is female. So you get the male-female principle operating all through this. And now here's something that I think is very important, and entirely worth a bit of our time and thinking. This appears in Yeats, W.B. Yeats, the great Irish poet's incredible volume, A Vision. And he takes it from a late medieval alchemical text called The Mirror of Men and Angels, Speculum Hominum et Angelorum. And what it shows are the 28 nights of the moon's cycle, which Yeats equates with the course of a lifetime. Now you'll see the first 8 nights, darkness prevails, and then light begins to dominate. The 15th night is the full night of the moon, and then we have a passage, the 22nd night, darkness begins to dominate. And Yeats describes it, is that system of ideals and principles that the society puts upon you in youth, when you're young. as the primary mask. At adolescence, the 28th day, the young person begins to have a sense of his own potentials, of his own possibilities, of his own uniqueness, of which the society can have known nothing. And there comes then a tension between obedience to the primary mask and the courage to assert what you are now recognizing as your own possibilities. This is the typical struggle of youth in our society. In a traditional society, the youth is not allowed to try to develop. That is put down. The thou shalt system of the society dominates the dharma of his social position. But in our world, there takes place this struggle, the struggle to find your own way, and it often leads to terrible crises in the family. I've seen it teaching the whole thing, and I've watched it. Is this young person going to submit to the primary mask, or are we going to see the flowering of this new intuitive possibility? Yeats calls this new possibility the antithetical mask. It is antithetical to the primary. We follow that light now, and we come to the 15th night of the moon. And as I said, there is the moon, and there is the sun, and they are of equal light. The moon, the body, your consciousness in the field of time and space has brought you to such a fullness of the potentials of your consciousness that now you are equivalent to the known sun. This is the moment for the mystical realization. It comes at the midpoint of life, which in these traditional systems is usually located at about 35 years old. This is when the body is at its full, at the fullest of its power. And from then on, there is a decline of power. Now, what is the nature of this? What is the meditation? As I said, the moon and the sun, the consciousness inflected in the field of time and space, and consciousness transcendent of temporal inflection are about equivalent, or as much so as they'll ever be in your life. And then you must ask yourself, who am I? Now, to illustrate this, I'm looking up at the ceiling, and I see light. And I may say, either the light, singular, is on, or the light, plural, are on. These are two ways of talking about exactly the same thing. It's just a shift in emphasis. Are we interested in the individual light, or are we interested in the light? Now, when one of those bulbs breaks, the superintendent of grounds is not going to say, oh, I really feel badly. I love that bulb. Nothing of the kind. Takes it out, throws it away, puts another bulb in. What's important? The vehicle, the bulb, or the light? Now I look down from all those lights and all these hits, and I ask myself, of what are these the vehicle? These are the vehicles of consciousness. And you can ask yourself, now, you are this specific bulb. What's important? Just what's important? And what are you? Are you the bulb? Or are you the light? Are you the body? Or are you the consciousness? When you have shifted to the consciousness, you can let the body go. You can be grateful to it for having brought you to the point of solar consciousness, transpersonal realization of your essential entity as simply by reflection implicated in the body. The other aspect of the meditation is to realize that these two lights are the same light. The moonlight is sunlight reflected. Your light, your consciousness, is consciousness reflected in that bound body of yours. The sunlight is that Indian light I was talking about. The moonlight is that light in your body. And at a certain point in your life, you can, to a certain extent, have the experience of identification with your consciousness. And then, with gratitude, you can let the body go. Otherwise, you're going to die like an old dog, just attached to that body, fighting to be alive. And now we have the symbols here of these moments. The birth of the antithetical man, temptation, the cup of Tristan and Isolde, not the marriage of Isolde and Mark. King Mark never even saw Isolde. He sent for her. And that was, from the medieval point of view, simply a traditional kind of marriage and not the kind that is of amour, love. The temptation, the left hand, my experience against what I'm told my experience ought to be. Then the beautiful perfection of life, the flower, the pulchritude of beauty of life. And then the 22nd day, when the body begins to fail, and what, holding on to the possibilities of your luminosity you are capable of, comes as a result of will, of control of yourself. And so we have the hand of the despotic ruler and violence against your own feebleness. But then there comes a moment of acquiescence in that, and we have at the end there wisdom as the fruit of life. And all of these are beautiful values, and they're all to be experienced. And as I said, there's a moment when you will have passed one of these thresholds and perhaps not know it. And your body is telling your mind, look, you're hanging on to something that's all finished now. And when such a hanging on takes place, there's a quality of drying up. Life loses its juice, and you should. Every one of those moon signs represents a moment of death and resurrection. Death of the infantile obedience and dependency and the birth of a self-responsible adult. Death to the hanging on to your fullness and the acquiescence in the afternoon of life. And death then to life at all and the acceptance of the ultimate passage. This is the moment as symbolized with the equating of the sun and moon across the torrent of samsara or the vortex of the pain of life. And the two signs above represent respectively sulfur and mercury, which are two alchemical metals that are associated with sun and moon. This is the moment of the crucifixion of Christ at the 34th year, with sun and moon up there in the left and right corners. This is Durga's representation. When one has yielded the body in this way, there pours forth from the right side the water of eternal life into the cup for the disposition of the world. Beneath is the skull of Adam. The medieval notion was that the cross was placed on the grave of Adam, and that the blood of the Savior thus bathed and baptized and saved the whole human race. Calvary means the skull. Golgotha in Aramaic means the skull, and that's the story. That's one way of interpreting the crucifixion. Now here is Dante's figure, and this is going to lead me into the concluding part of my talk. Dante divides the human life into four stages: what he calls infancy or adolescence to the age of 25, and the qualities proper to that period. According to Dante, it sounds funny today, not so funny here as it does in New York when I say it. Qualities of youth are obedience, the sense of shame, comeliness of appearance, and sweetness of conduct. The period from 25 to 45 is the period of maturity, And the qualities here are those of the knightly ideal. They are temperance and courage and love and loyalty and courtesy. Now, Dante himself, at the 35th year, that's right in the middle there, had the experience, or at least declared he had the experience, of the vision represented in the Divine Comedy. With that, he passed from the lunar to the solar mode of consciousness. Dante had the good fortune to be born in 1265, so that at the year 1300, he was 35 years old, in the middle of his life. And in his period, it was thought that the 1300th year of the world was the middle year of the world, so he had a very easy time identifying his personal consciousness with that of the universe. Then we come to the period from 45 to 70. Now in India, that's the time to go into the woods and practice yoga and wipe out whatever ego you may have. But in the West, the idea is to remain in the world. You have experienced the world and so capable of criticism. The qualities here are wisdom and justice, absolute justice, and cheerfulness and generosity. What have you got to lose? Then we have from 70 on, hold everything, Dante calls this a period of decrepitude. And the qualities here are those of looking back over the lifetime with gratitude. Because no matter what your seat at the opera, it was a great show. And looking forward to death as to a return home. Now you can place yourself on this curve and have some idea of what your psychological problem is. That in the first part of life, we have the problems of shadow and anima relationships. We are becoming implicated in the world through our outside developments, and the society itself is engaging us in its work. However, after that midpoint, the society begins to disengage us. And there comes this problem of the second half of life to which I'm now going to move. Here is Rembrandt's representation of Faust, Dr. Faust, beholding or experiencing the sign of the macrocosm. That's the moment that we now face. The world of nature, our nature, not the social order that has dismissed us and that we are withdrawing from inevitably, but now that nature to which we withdraw and out of which we came and back into which we're going. And here we have it with a cross in the center and the four signs, I-N-R-I, the symbols on the cross of the crucified Christ, whom we've just seen at this moment in Jerusalem. Now keep your eye on that and move it up just a little to the left, and you'll see the same sign from one of Jung's male patients at this moment of his life. This is not anima, this is not animus, this is the self, the middle, the center, finding well, I'm sorry about this. There we go. Thank you very much. Jung's interpretation of the four is fascinating. He sees it as symbolic of a psychological totality. The four functions, as he called them, of our psychological experiencing and evaluating of life. The vertical axis there represents the functions through which we experience our world, and they are sensation and intuition. Sensation is just exactly what it says. It has to do with the five senses and what they bring to us into our consciousness. The senses of smell, temperature, touch, taste, sight, and sound. And what they give us is what is right here now in this present space. Intuition, on the other hand, is the intuition of potential. Intuitions of implications, intuitions of possibilities into time, and oriented insight, invisible to those who simply see in terms of space. Now, each of us has a tendency to favor one or the other of these. And if our accent is on the spatial experience, the now, we're going to miss potentials. And if our emphasis is always on potentials, we're going to perhaps be tripped up by some fact right here and now. The prime function for a statesman or for a pedagogue is intuition. The statesman intuiting the possibilities of the moment, and the pedagogue intuiting the potentials of the student. You can't do the same thing with a computer. Computers do not intuit. The way of the horizontal now is the way of evaluating. You may evaluate your experiences in terms either of thinking values or of feeling values, and these are opposed to each other. True, false, right, wrong, moral, immoral, and all that sort of thing. Feeling, rich, banal, trivial, exciting, promising, all that. The values of art are not over on this side. When people go to an artist and say, what does your painting mean? Well, if you want to insult you, he might tell you. But the sense of a painting is not in giving it some intellectual description. And similarly then, one of these will wipe the other out. A young man who has programmed his whole life in terms of a rational program is endangered by his own feelings. His own feelings become his greatest enemy, upsetting his apple cart. Inferior feeling is sentimentalism. Sentimentalism is feeling on the basis of thinking values. Things that you think you ought to feel about, you feel about in that way. Inferior thinking is opinion. Based on, well, we get a lot of that in student relationships. They haven't thought anything out, but somebody they admire tells them that this is it, and then go on to preach a sermon and blow up buildings on that basis. Now, there is a fifth function, which is in the middle, and this Jung calls the transcendent function. It's there that the others come together, and that is the point from which symbolic forms come, from which the imagination builds its mythological imagery. The imagery of myth unites sensation, intuition, feeling, and thinking. Now, to apply it to that figure that I showed before, let us say that our main function is our thinking function, up here by the ego. And the ego identifies its career with its thinking program. Then the feeling function will be down here in the shadow, and every feeling impulse will carry with it all kinds of threats to the ego. The other two functions would be, in that case, then sensation and intuition. The intuition more or less available, but the feeling very hard to get up. So the problem of the totality of the psyche is to work, as one friend of mine once said, on all four cylinders. To have all four available. To feel when it's time to feel. Think when it's time to think. Sensate when it's time to sensate, and intuit when it's time to intuit. That's to say, the three that are available must be illuminated by the fourth. And then you will have the total square with the total circle in it, and the male and female principles in controlled and decent relationship to each other. And now for a short run of symbolic forms. Here from a little Gothic church in Switzerland, we have three rabbits running around. They're backs to the center, and as Jung says, they, as it were, sense the center, but don't have the fourth among them. And here's a picture by one of his women patients, which gives you the same essential experience. The dog with the collar may very well represent for her the primary function, whatever it happens to be in her life.